Emo. Emotional music for emotional people. E. M. O.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to second week in a row of me having Marco from Sugar Cult on the podcast. We recorded this podcast, like I said last time, a few weeks ago, I believe. I don't really know the exact time. Time is so incredibly fake these days. But like I mentioned last time, we split it up into two parts to make it easier to consume because we care about consumers here on this podcast because capitalism or what the fuck ever. So hope you guys enjoyed last week. This week we've got another hour or so, maybe extra 10 minutes. I don't know. I think it's an hour or 10 minutes, or maybe a little bit longer than part one. But this episode we dive into a little bit more kind of Star Static on for Sugar Call and kind of talk a little bit about Lights Out. We talk a little bit about how they got on Van Wilder and how they got the music video with Tara Reid and Ryan Reynolds and how everything after that up to Lights Out and what happened with the release of Lights Out and then kind of where Sugar Call is now. So we talk a little bit about the potential for new music, if that's there, what that would look like for the band and what it would take for them to get there if they were ever to get to that point. I don't even know if that sentence I'd said just made any sense. I feel like I repeated myself a whole bunch, but honestly, it's too early for me to re-record this. So we're just a minute and a half in, just fucking trucking right along. So don't hit pause and close out of your fucking podcast app and say, this is garbage. Give it time. I'm about to stop talking so you can hear Marco and I talk a little bit now. Thank you guys so much for coming back to part two and for not closing out of this if you made it 2 minutes already into me just rambling here. If this is not your first episode, you know this is generally what I do for 2.5 minutes or so, just fill the time so it's not so boring. So anyway, I'm going to stop talking now. As always, you're going to hear an ad, then we'll get right back into Marco and I's conversation, picking up with Start Static, that Van Wilder story, and then so much more. Check back next week. We got another great episode. We got a great fucking record we're talking about next week. I'm so fucking stoked to do it. I think you guys will love it too. So thank you guys so much. Lou, I wanted to, you know, ask you something about Start Static because I know we talked about this a little bit last time. Obviously, you know, that record had Bouncing Off the Walls and that's when Van Wilder came in. And I think that's such a funny story. Of how came to be, right? And how, like, you guys got on Van Wilder and then how the music video came. And I think that's just such a... I really like that story. I think it's funny. So I wanted to see if you could tell it this time.
Absolutely, dude. It's funny. Like, I mean, going on with what I just... the whole spiel I just told you, like, now it should come as no surprise that our attitude was, like, whatever it takes, you know... we're not gonna, you know, it's not like once you get signed, you're like, oh, sweet. Whew, now I can exhale and relax.
Yeah, let somebody else do the work. Yeah.
You were like, now is when you sprint even harder.
Yeah.
Because this isn't like time to, I think a lot of bands make that mistake where they get signed and they think like, okay, now it's time to like take my hands off the wheel and like exhale and relax and chill. It's like, no, dude, you have maybe enough time to pop a bottle of champagne and make a toast and like feel that, hey, we got signed. Then it's like, dude, it's as if you just started over again. Like that's when you need to be like full on. So our attitude with Start Static was kind of like, this is our chance. This doesn't mean we've arrived. This is like the gates, you know, but now we got to like play this really carefully and do it really right. Like Warped Tour, like I said, be Model Citizen on the Warped Tour. It paid off. They asked us to do the whole tour. Because we did the whole tour, we were able to little by little, like meet all these fans across America. Eventually you become friends with the other bands, like these big giant bands that were on the main stage were like, come see us play, or like see him in the lunch line and they'd be like, dude, saw you cut your fucking set the other day, man, you guys are fucking dope. And you're like, really? You're like the guy from, like, you know, again, like Rancid or something like that, you know, and you were Pennywise, like, I thought you were gonna kill me, you know, I thought you were about to come up and be like, dude, I saw your fucking set, fuck you, you know, and instead they're like, dude, I saw your set, you guys are awesome, you remind me of the shit I fucking loved when I was a kid, and you're like, dude, this is so rad. And so like we started like feeling like even though we were the freshmen, like the seniors were being cool to us, and we kind of felt like, wow, this is so cool, like all you got to do is not be a dick and like rock out to the fullest extent And not only are you going to earn the respect of fans around America, but you're going to also earn the respect of the people on the tour. And lots of those people on the Warped Tour are like other people in big bands, people from labels. And so we started getting all these bands offering us, hey, dude, you want to come on our tour? And like, we just, our managers started getting hit up left and right. But like, basically every band we became friends with on the Warped Tour.
So yeah.
Fun brought us on tour, you know, Good Charlotte brought us on tour, all those bands. And like, Blink offered us some tour dates. We got to tour with Blink. That was pretty awesome. We got to tour with Blink twice, once in 2001 and then again in like 2004. But so we had this weird opportunity where they call us up and they're like, hey, so the label, I guess the label had put our record out. Mm-hmm. The label is putting out the soundtrack to this new National Lampoon movie called Van Wilder, which is like, they're sort of saying is going to be like the new version of Animal House or like American Pie or Porky's, like one of those like college comedies, you know? And we were like, just what's the answer? What are you asking me or telling me? And they're like, so do you guys, are you guys comfortable with having a song on that? We're like, the answer is yes to everything.
Yeah.
Like if it means our music's going to get out there, it's fucking yeah. Hell yeah. And they're like, well, we didn't tell you the rest of it. The problem is they have no more budget. So they're not going to have any money to give you guys up front. If you know, the only money you'll ever make off this is if it becomes a hit movie and you get like residual performance royalties, right? And we're like, I don't fucking care. We've been broke all these years anyway. You know, like
what else is doing?
I have my music in a movie, so why not? You know. So we literally said, "Oh, good. So if they're out of money, why don't you just tell them this? They can use as much of our music as they want for free."
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, are you serious? Because they were only just asking us for Bouncing Off the Walls for their soundtrack. Mm-hmm. We said, no, tell them they can use as much of our music as they possibly want. So if you ever watch Van Wilder, it's like the whole movie is basically like a Stark Static celebration. Like, and that's because we didn't charge them anything for it.
Yeah.
They're like, fuck yeah, let's just, you know. They just
free music, you had them then, yeah.
Yeah, and but it's kind of cool because, and to be honest with you, that movie was kind of a flop. It came out and like kind of came and went, didn't really, you know, it was a flop at the box office, but this weird thing happened where it became this like sort of like late night sort of stoner drunk person classic where people would like, you
got
know, you want to watch
wind,
a movie that's not, like people get home from a bar and they don't want to watch like, you know, they don't want to watch like some like heady movie that's going to be all like, you know, they just want to watch something kind of silly and dumb.
Yeah.
And like that movie became the sort of thing for a big generation of people. And I didn't realize it, but people to this day come up to me, like all the years people start to come up to us and go, dude, I found about your band because I was watching this movie, Van Wilder. And you're like, I thought that movie was a flop. But literally like one out of every three people that comes up to me tells me they learned about our band from that movie. So I was like, shit, man. You know, it's just again, just like say yes, just do the thing. Mm-hmm. You know, don't overthink things. Just go for it. It's like, what's the worst that's going to happen? And so that was our attitude. But the funny thing about that was like, it paid off in another way because we got invited to play what's called a wrap party. So when a movie finishes, they usually have like a big party and like all their crew and they invite press. And that's kind of their like press junket and chance to sort of get the word out about the movie and get everyone excited about it. And so that when it actually comes out, it turns out to be this big thing. So we got flown out. They said, do you want to play the rap party since you guys have so much music in this movie? And we're like, sure. So they put us on a plane and they flew us out. You know, all the shit to us, it was like, this is a it sounds like a vacation.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're flying us to Florida. We each get our own hotel room. Again, we're used to sleeping on the floor, but now we get our own hotel room and we're going to play a fucking party that's going to have like movie stars at it.
Yeah.
Like, are you kidding me right now? And we get to go to like Florida and we live in California. So like, it was like, yeah, let's go.
No doubt.
We get there. And then once we get there, they're like treating us like rock stars. And of course we don't see ourselves that way. We still see ourselves as just like kids from Santa Barbara that like, you know, snuck into the fucking party, you know, like somehow like snuck into the Warped
Tour. Don't
belong.
Right. Yeah.
Right. We're like, they're like, oh, okay, your talent. Okay, the talent goes to the VIP section over there, like the bar. We have like a open bar with catering, and that's where we're holding like you guys and like the, you know, Tara and Ryan. And we're like, as in Tara Reid and Ryan Reynolds. You mean like the actors in the movie? And they're like, yeah, you know, all you, basically all you famous people go hang out because you probably all know each other anyway. And we're like,
yeah, famous. Yeah.
Yeah, like they're clearly mistaken, but did someone say free drinks? So we just like went there and like we get in there and like the people, like, you know, again, you meet famous people and you realize they're just people and they were people. Ryan Reynolds,
absolutely.
A total sweetheart, like the sweetest guy in the world. He wasn't like a huge superstar back then. Yeah. He was kind of an emerging star, but Tara Reid was like a pretty big star.
Yeah, she was big, there. Yeah.
Yeah, she was kind of big. So it was kind of a trip to see her. And then, like I told you this last time, like she got a little bit, I think she slid into a few cocktails.
Yeah.
and she was just like kind of sloppy. And she was like, I remember she would like, we were in that room drinking with her and she was sitting on our singer's lap. She was kind of halfway singing, sitting on Tim's lap and my lap.
Yeah.
She was like loud talking into our ears, just all close talking.
Yeah.
And she had this really scratchy, gravelly voice. And she's just like, I fucking love music. You guys, like, you guys fucking, like, music's like, I used to date Carson Daly. Like, I'll hook you up with fucking MTV. And like, she's just, basically we're like, okay, this is what happens when
I'm right.
And, you know, it's not like any other drunk girl you ever hung out with. And right. But yeah. This one happens to be connected to Tara Reid. And you're like, okay. And I was like sort of thinking from my mind, I was like, well, Bert from The Used went out with Kelly Osbourne. And like sort of, you know, I was like, maybe what's going to happen here is Tim's going to end up having to like have a one night stand with Tara Reid. Then like paparazzi's going to take pictures of it. And then we're going to be all over the tabloid.
That's how you blow up right there.
Sugar Cult's going to blow up. That's like the unknown guy who's dating this movie star, you know, and that all played out in my head.
Yeah.
And at that point, I was like, that's actually the worst thing we could possibly do, you know? And I went to Tara Reid's assistant and I was like, I think your friend's had a little too much to drink and you should probably make sure she gets home safe.
Yeah.
She's like, yeah, don't worry. We're going to get her home. I'm like, yeah, good. Cause there's, you know, I was kind of like I got the, you know, there was like a, I don't know. I guess there was like some kind of a good person in me. Where yeah. I was like, this we could, you know, the devil's saying, take advantage of the situation.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Saying, you should probably let this poor guy home, you know? But there was a little part of me somewhere in between the angel and the devil where I was like, yeah, but we might, can't hurt to ask if she wouldn't mind doing something for Sugar Cult.
Right,
yeah. I went up to her, I was just like, dude, you should be in our fucking video. And she's like, what do you mean? I'm like, we got to shoot a video for this song when we get home, and like, we should totally like have you be in our video. She's like, I'll fucking be in your video. Just fucking, here's my number. Like, and she's just like, I'm like, we probably can't afford you. She's like, fuck that, dude. She's like, I'll do it for a pack of fucking cigarettes and a bottle of champagne. And we're like, seriously? And she's like, yeah. And then I guess she got dragged off into her, you know, probably went back to her hotel. And I literally call her manager the next day and I was like, dude, I called him that night. I was like, I think I might have like gotten sort of a handshake agreement with Tara Reid that she's gonna be in our video. And he's like, what are you talking about, dude? Just shut, you know. And I was like, no, seriously, she seemed like she was into it. And he was like, was she drunk? And I'm like, well, maybe she
perhaps a little bit.
Yeah. And he's like, dude, give me a break, you guys. And me and Tim were like, well, what's it hurt to ask?
Yeah.
And so it turned out, like, again, just gotta just go for it, guys.
Yeah, just shoot your shot. Yeah, man, absolutely.
Shoot your shot. And what happened was we shot for Tara Reid to just follow up. Like, hey, who knows? Maybe she's cool. And in the end, what happened was, yes, she would do it for free. And they would also get Ryan Reynolds to play the boy in the video.
Yeah.
And all we had to do was agree to have like scenes from Van Wilder like
interjected right
into our video for Bouncing Off the Walls temporarily, like while they were promoting Van Wilder, and then we could take them out.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, but the movie would help pay for the video. So not only
sweet
we get our video, but they actually fucking paid for the video. We're like, this is so rad. And we made our video for Bouncing out in LA. We literally have a picture, like Tara Reid's dressing room, there's a bottle of champagne and a carton of cigarettes. Like, that's what I was like, hey, deal's a deal, we promised you.
Yeah,
you know. And like, they were such sweethearts. They were such professionals and so cool. And like, you know, watch the video for Bouncing Off the Walls. It came out pretty rad.
Yeah.
And then we ended up getting to kind of ride their coattails because they were doing all their promo for the movie. And every time they did promo, they would like be like, actually, we're in one of the band's videos. And they would like show our video.
Yeah.
We did a bunch of promo things with them. Like, I think we did like a cooking show with them. Sure, we got to go on TRL with them, like all this cool shit. And it was like, and again, the movie flopped, but it ended up helping us kind of sneak us into pop culture. And, you know, so that was kind of fun.
Yeah.
Crazy. There's one story I didn't tell you last time.
Oh, go for it.
One time we said no. And I'm still kind of kicking myself for saying no. We got offered to, it was kind of a weird offer, but we, this is really embarrassing, but do you remember when Britney Spears did Joan Jett's I Love Rock and Roll?
Yeah.
She actually covered I Love Rock and Roll, but she said, she famously said in Rolling Stone, she was like, yeah, I'm doing like Pat Benatar's song, I Love Rock and Roll. And you were just like, oh my God, you don't even fucking understand it.
Yeah,
and like,
yeah.
Our band, like we love Joan Jett, and like Joan Jett actually became a fan of Sugar Cult, which is so weird. She come to our shows in New York and like asked to get put on the guest list. And we're like, of course, you fucking, you know, we'll pay you.
You need to make her pay.
We'll like a taxi, like, you know, whatever. And she came to our shows a bunch of times. We actually wrote the song. This is another bit of trivia within trivia. We actually started out writing a song, Los Angeles, from Lights Out. Mm-hmm. That was Joan Jett's people had reached out to us and said, hey, Joan's putting out like a Christmas record and she's looking for like young bands to collaborate with. So we actually started writing the song Los Angeles as like our Joan Jett Christmas song.
Yeah.
So we were like, we're going to write this like bleak song about like a nuclear winter, like kind of LA, like kind of bleak LA song about how like LA never really feels like Christmas. Cause it's just like, you know, there's no, I think there's one line that says like, one more holiday that I cannot celebrate, you know, that's in there because it started. That's like the one little thing that's remaining from, because that song started out as like, oh, that's our Joan Jett Christmas song. You know, like we didn't even have the name for it. It was just the Joan Jett Christmas song. Yeah. And then once we started developing it, we're like, I think her record fell apart. And, and at the same time we were like, I don't think we should give this song to Joan Jett. I think we should keep it for ourselves. And problem with that song is we could never decide on the chorus. And we had like, we probably wrote like 10 choruses for that song. And then I think Tim was hanging out with Tom. We used to always play shows with the Plain White Tees. Mm-hmm. Like before Hey There Delilah blew up, they were like, you couldn't get rid of the Plain White Tees. They were like always the opening band for Sugar Cult every time.
Yeah.
We were playing. Cause we just loved their band and loved the guys. They were sweethearts. They were such hardworking dudes. Like it's no wonder they eventually became big. But honestly, like between you and me and like everyone who's listening, we kind of felt like we love the Plain White Tees, but they're never going to go anywhere.
Yeah.
Like they were like kind of like sounded a little bit like Jimmy World or something. And we thought they were like cool. But we thought like they're just too unfocused. Like I don't think the fans are ever going to really like, you know, like I don't think it's ever gonna take root. And we wanted it to. We're like, we'll do everything we can to help them. We're gonna always have to offer them the opening slot. But like no one seemed to get it. But one thing you did notice was they had this like Midwestern work ethic. Like their singer Tom would go outside every fucking night, even in the snow, without fail, and do an acoustic set on the street after they would open for us. So like they'd open, the other band would play, the other band would play, we would play, and at the end of the night, he'd be out on the street singing while the kids were like getting picked up by their parents or people were like waiting for the, you know, for their ride to show up or whatever. And he would be out there and he would sing this whole acoustic set. And he played the song, Hey There Delilah, which he never played on stage.
Like, yeah.
Their set when they play a show was like all like mid-tempo and fast, like pop punk kind of rock songs. But then he'd be outside doing acoustic songs and like maybe sell a couple extra pieces of merch for kids who were like, oh, this is kind of cool. It's like Dashboard or something, you know. No surprise that they ended up.
Yeah, becoming, absolutely. You
know? But that song was like 6 years old by the time anyone ever heard it on the radio, which is a great story.
That's nuts. Like, yeah, anyway, it's cool.
Somehow Tom and Tim were hanging out and Tim was like bouncing chorus ideas off of Tom. And Tom's the one who like solved Los Angeles.
Yeah.
He was like, why don't you guys do it like this? And he kind of grabbed the guitar and Tim was like, oh fuck. Okay. So like, so he's like credited. He's like, he gets a songwriting credit on that song.
Yeah.
Kinda, course, which is kind of rad, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
But, cause the Plain White Tees were definitely a big part of our story. So I love that. Like we hardly ever collaborated with outside people, but that is like that one song was like a song that we meant to write for Joan Jett and then ended up getting rescued by Tom from Plain White Tees. And
yeah,
I think it turned out to be one of the better songs on Lights Out.
Yeah.
But anyway, dude, I'm jumping all over the place here. I know we don't have all the time in the world.
No,
but,
you're perfect. Yeah.
But the funny thing, just to go back to finish that story, yeah. Britney Spears, I Love Rock and Roll. And she asked us if we would be the backup band. Like her people contacted our people and said, we saw pictures of Sugar Call. They look kind of cool. And she's just like the idea we were like wearing leather jackets. And
yeah.
She's like, would they be the band? And here's what, you know, we'll fly them to this place. We'll pay them money. And then they'll be on MTV as like my band in the background of our video. And I was like, we were kind of like typical, you know, we were kind of overthinking this time. We're like,
yeah,
we had had some success, but we weren't like, you know, we still weren't as big as we ever got, but we were like getting there. Like we were getting a lot of respect and things were like moving at an upwards trajectory. And I remember sitting in our bus and talking about it. No, we weren't even in a bus yet. I don't think, maybe in our RV. And we were talking about it and we're like, it was a total band like debate where it was like, okay, pros and cons, like here's the thing. But we had this one show that was going to be, it's kind of funny. We had a show in San Diego and one of the bands on that show was like on Pennywise's label.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought like, if we will have to cancel that show in order to fly to do Britney's video.
Yeah.
And we were like, this is how neurotic we were. We're like, if we cancel that show, the band that's on Pennywise's label is going to tell Pennywise. And then Pennywise is going to tell the Warped Tour and everybody in punk rock. And plus Pennywise will probably beat us up because they're like the scariest fucking dude, the guys in the world. Like you don't want to fuck with Fletcher.
Yeah.
And like, although he's a total sweetheart and they're totally lovely to our band. But at the same time, we're kind of a little intimidated. We're like, what if like the word gets out like, hey, they canceled the show. Why'd they cancel the show? Oh, because they're going to be in Britney Spears' video.
Lose that street cred.
Like,
yeah.
We're like, that is just going to destroy our fucking credibility.
Yeah.
And like how we've even built this much credibility as a, you know, essentially a power pop band is extraordinary. So like now we're going to like completely flush that down the toilet so we can like have this one roll in the hay with Britney Spears that may or may not even work. Like that video, for all we know, that video could come out, get played once and then get canned.
Yeah, exactly.
And so we're sitting there overthinking it. We're like, but we'll get paid a couple $1,000s and we'll get to meet Britney Spears.
Yeah.
And in a video and, you know, something to tell our kids or something one day. And it was one of those things where you're like, I don't know, man. I feel like it just doesn't feel like the right move to make.
Yeah.
And so we just kind of said no. And another band grabbed it. I think that band was American Hi-Fi. Motherfucker.
Yeah.
They're our friends. We're like, fuck. They're like, dude, it was so fun. She was so cool. It was great. And the video got played like 5 times on MTV anyway. And it got forgotten about, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And we're like, damn it. We should have just done it.
Yeah.
But you know, the moral of the story is just like, what did it say? It's better to ask for forgiveness than to ask for permission. Like you just gotta like go for it and like do the shit that's adventurous. But
yeah. Anyway. No, anyway, absolutely. That would be fun, man. Yeah.
So many stories, but so what do you want to know? Anything else? Lights Out. What do you guys want to talk about? Because I don't want to have this podcast that never ends.
No, you're perfect. No, just like the plan was last time. I'll split this bad boy up here, make it easier for people to dive into. But I wanted to definitely I want to talk about Lights Out a lot. And that's kind of how we, like I said, first connected here in the first place. And obviously we could talk about Palm Trees. That was the record that, I mean, had Memory on it, like you mentioned, and that song Memory blew up in a different way, right? I mean, Memory, I think we talked about this last time. Memory wasn't like the radio single, right? Because you had Bouncing Off the Walls, and I think you had Pretty Girl was like a higher charting single technically, but Memory succeeded in so many different ways.
Well, you have to put this stuff in cultural context, because if you think about it, 2001 was then when our first record came out. That's also like right when like all that Napster stuff had happened, mm-hmm. and the record industry was kind of in tumult, and like, you know, CDs weren't selling like they used to, and people were, you know, there was a lot of file sharing. We always encouraged it. We told our fans, we're like, buy this record and then burn it for all your friends.
Yeah, absolutely.
We just wanted to, you know, we were like, we're not gonna make any money off this record anyway.
Yeah,
we want people to hear it. So we were kind of on board with the spirit of like, hey, this is a new century, let's get rad. And then like that year, 2001, is also when the iPod first came out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And also like the Strokes first record came out right before Start Static. Mm-hmm. White Stripes had been a band for a while, but that's when they like really blew up on the radio. It was kind of this interesting moment in time where like you could, the writing was on the wall that like this sort of like rap metal, Limp Bizkit thing was kind of on its way out. Bands right. like NSYNC and the Backstreet Boys were kind of on their way down. Mm-hmm. Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera was kind of on their way down. And there was this like new feeling in the air of like rock music that was like real was happening again. Like
right.
again, like I would like to think our band, you know, I think of our band as being in the generation of bands like The Strokes and The Hives and The Vines and,
yep.
you know, not that we sounded like those bands necessarily, but that we were sort of in that same like tidal wave.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But then we, you know, primarily like the one that we got known for was probably the next set of waves that came immediately after, which was like, again, like Newfound Glory.
Right. Yeah.
And all the sort
Good
of
pop Charlotte, Simple Plan. Yeah.
Early emo bands of the sort of new emo, second, third wave of emo or something.
Right. Exactly.
And then of course, like The Used and all that kind of stuff. Like those were all the bands coming up with us at the same time. They were sort of in our same grade. And so there was this just feeling of new shit, but the industry, the music industry was still functioning largely the way it had been for years. Like the idea was like, you play a song on the radio and then people buy the CDs. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that was Start Static. So you had Bouncing Off, you had Stuck in America was our first single. Then you had Bouncing Off the Walls. Then you had Pretty Girl. Then we put Bouncing Off the Walls. I think Bouncing Off the Walls got released like three times as a single. Like once off the soundtrack to Van Wilder, once off of Start Static, and then again off Start Static, like to pop radio, or like sure. crossed over from rock to pop and became like this. So it was a weird song. It had a lot of life. But and again, our fans are the ones that chose Bouncing Off the Walls as our single. We put it on our website, we put a bunch of options and they voted for Bouncing Off the Walls. So that's why that was our single.
Yeah.
Again, you know, I know it sounds cheesy to say, but I really mean it when it's like any success we ever had, you know, it's way more to do with our fans than our record company.
Sure. Absolutely.
To them, and way more to do with our fans than anything we could possibly control as just four dudes, you know, making up songs. Like,
yeah.
So really the little success we had as Sugar Cult belongs to the people, for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, what happened was then you had the internet starting to happen more, like mm-hmm. people, like things like MySpace were getting really big, and like seemed like the Warped Tour. We were on the Warped Tour 2002 also, and it seemed like mm-hmm. everybody had one of those like T-Mobile Sidekicks and a BlackBerry. Yeah. And everyone was like on MySpace, and I think Memory came out right around then when like MySpace was like raging at its height,
mm-hmm.
and like things like Fuse were on TV, and you had MTV playing this kind of music.
Yeah, absolutely.
Still, and like it just, Memory was kind of, luckily we got in that world, and our video for Memory started getting played like heavily on Fuse mm-hmm. and MTV. Yeah, I think that came out the same year that Green Day would eventually put out American Idiot.
Yeah.
Which was mm-hmm. kind of their comeback record, because they had been a band in the 90s that was really popular. Like I said, Tim used to have like Green Day posters on his wall.
Yeah.
And like, then they sort of went down a little bit.
Mm-hmm. They did.
They almost forgot about Green Day. And then they kind of came back to life when like this tour happened with Blink-182 and Jimmy World.
Yeah, the Pop Disaster Tour.
Yeah. And we had played one show. I remember on Start Static, we had played this radio festival in Connecticut that like merged with a Pop Disaster Tour mm-hmm. where they like just like said, okay, we'll have Green Day, Blink, and Jimmy Eat World be on the same bill as these other bands too, and just make this big thing. So we got to actually play a show on the Pop Disaster Tour, because it was like this big radio festival.
Yeah, fusion. Absolutely.
And from that, we went to people and we were like, dude, we have to meet Green Day. And I had met the guys in Green Day like, you know, years earlier, but like before Sugar Cult, just through like the punk rock world. But,
sure,
like,
yeah.
We kind of went and got, someone was like, oh, I'll introduce you to Green Day. And we got walked over to their camp, and they couldn't have been cooler. Like they didn't just like sort of blow us off and say hi. They literally were like, dude, we know who you guys are. You guys are fucking cool. Like, what's up? You want to go drink a bottle of wine with us on our bus? And they invited us, like Billy Joe and his wife invited us onto their bus, and we hung out with them. I remember their kids were like little kids. Like now those guys are in like Swimmers and all these big bands.
Absolutely.
But they were like little children, like playing with Legos, you know, on their bus. And I was like, this is such a trip. I don't think I had ever been on a tour bus at that point. I was like, this is a trip. It's like, it's a family. This guy's like a singer with his wife and his two kids on his own bus. And we were drinking a bottle of wine, which is like think of something you would do with like your parents. So I was like, this is so rad. Like most bands are like drinking beers and like, you know, and he's like, we're pouring this nice bottle of red wine and we're talking about punk rock and hanging out. And just like, we just, you know, couldn't have been more of a sweetheart, just so down to earth. And sometimes you meet people in bands and they're like down to earth, but you sort of feel like it's a little bit of a put on.
Sure.
But with those guys, it felt so genuine. And it was just, I mean, they literally gave us like their fucking email addresses. They're like, dude, yeah, stay in touch, you know, cool. And then we went over to Trey and Mike's bus. They had a separate bus because they didn't have their families with them. And they were like, dude, mixing drinks and laughing about shit. And I was like, this is a band that's been around for like a, you know, generation or two. And they're still like stoked. Like they're still like in love with rock and roll. And that was like such an epiphany to see early on, you know, like that little glimpse. And then we kind of forgot about each other for a couple of years. You know, I think I maybe emailed them every once in a while, like, you know, we'd like maybe send them like a Christmas card or something like that. You know, sort of, you know, keep the relationship alive.
Yeah, absolutely.
And like in 2004 on the Warped Tour, when we were just fresh with Palm Trees and Power Lines had just freshly come out, we get this call. And they're like, okay, don't get too excited because it's nothing's for sure. But I'm just going to tell you right now, you're on the short list for contenders to possibly open for Green Day on the American Idiot Tour.
Yeah.
And the other band is they've already decided on one band, which is Newfound Glory. And they're deciding on the other band, the other band they're going to take. And it's between you guys and two other bands. And we're not going to tell you who those bands are. And we're like, oh, shit. So the whole summer, if you saw us on the Warped Tour 2004, we're like, we're playing the main stage. I mean, we'd gotten like pretty good, big at that point. We had Memory on the radio and on TV. And, you know, at this point it was our second record. So people knew Bouncing Off the Walls. Like, and so we felt like, okay, we've kind of grown into ourselves as a band. And oh God, it would be so amazing. I mean, like I said, our singer, like Green Day is probably the reason he writes songs, you know?
Sure,
like,
absolutely.
And we obviously had a lot of respect for them. If you had to say what Sugar Cult sound like, I would just say Green Day meets Nirvana. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of like the way I would describe it if I was sitting next to someone on a plane and they're like, yeah, hey, the band. And I would just pick the most mainstream bands I could think of. I'd probably say, yeah, it's kind of like somewhere between, you know, the darkness of Nirvana and the, you know, anxiety attack of Green Day. You
sure.
know? And so like we heard that they were looking for a band for this new record they were putting out. And again, we weren't that excited. Because at the same time, we're like, well, how big is this going to be? I mean, Green Day has kind of run its course. Mm-hmm. So, but if nothing else, at least we're going to get to say we got to open for Green Day. Which
sure.
Is kind
of, yeah.
We didn't know American Idiot was going to, I don't think even Green Day realized what.
Yeah, I can't imagine they did. Yeah.
But I will say that we were in New York City on tour and we went and visited the Fuse studios. And the girl who was like running Fuse was super cool to me and Tim. And she brought us into her office and was like, you guys like Green Day? And we're like, yeah. She's like, you want to hear some of their new shit? And we're like, fuck, really? She's like, yeah, I got an advanced copy. And she played us like, you know, American Idiot and like Holiday and maybe like the one that sounds like Wonderwall by Oasis. What's that one called again?
That Wake Me Up When September Ends.
Yeah. That one. And we were like, dude, I mean, you heard that shit and you were like, we looked at each other, we're like, dude, this is fucking really good. This is like this could be a whole new beginning for me. I remember just feeling that. So it was like once it came out,
and
the world responded in kind and like you saw people, like you were like, yeah, kind of like, I knew this was something was special about this record. And then sure enough, on the tour, on the Warped Tour, we eventually got, we were the most annoying, we'd call our manager every day. Did you find out yet? Are we doing it? You know, like, you'd be like, dude, I'll call you guys. Don't worry about it. And you'd call, hey, I was just wondering, I didn't have my phone for like an hour. Did you happen to call and like hang up on my, not leave a message? He's like, dude, don't get too excited. You know? And then one day he was like, all right, guys, are you all in the same room? We're like, what? And they're like, okay, so they chose you. And we're like, oh, shit. Like, oh my God. So we get to open for like, so that, like, I guess it was, I don't remember when the exact date was, but it was like towards the end of 2004, we got to go on 5-week tour all around America playing arenas open.
Yeah.
And it was insane. So on that tour, Green Day asked us if we would open for them in Japan in like spring of 2005. And of course, we're like, of course we're gonna do that, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But we also said to ourselves, we're like, at some point we gotta chill, because we've literally been going nonstop from like the moment we got signed in February of 2001, and it's like 4 years of nonstop touring now, right? Like, we're gonna like, you know, we're gonna like fucking cease to be human at some point, you know? Like, and so we have this thing where we're like, I know, here's what we're gonna do, guys. We're gonna go out with a bang, and we're gonna finish the Green Day tour in Japan, and then we're gonna come home and just take our time, go back to getting a rehearsal space, kind of ease into our lives, and just make a rehearsal schedule, and just like slowly but surely write when we feel like writing, and make what will be our next record, which of course became Lights Out. But we're like, we're gonna like stop taking tours, we're gonna stop like deadlines, we just tell our label like, hey, we'll finish our record when we finish our record, and just kind of go back to a normal life of like being people who live somewhere and have a rehearsal studio and just you know, hang out with each other socially and go out with groups of friends. And it's just sort of like, that's what we did. We're like, because like, what a best, you know, like, where can we go besides Green? Like, there's nothing bigger than opening for Green Day in America and Japan, you know?
Right,
and
exactly.
And the places were twice as big. It was like, you're playing in front of like 20,000 people. And it's just insane, you know? Two nights in a row playing sold out shows in front of 20,000 people. And you're like, and I'm
fucking
and,
nuts.
You know, this is, you know, our drummer had had a kid about a year earlier. And then I was due to have a kid that spring. My first kid was about to turn 16 this weekend.
Oh my goodness. Well, happy early birthday to them.
Yeah, which is crazy. I mean, the thing, he's a 16, about to turn 16. Well, we were pregnant with him while I was on that tour with Green Day. As a matter of fact, he was born while I was in Japan. This is all in our DVD.
Oh my gosh.
Find our DVD called Back to the Disaster, or you can see a free link to it. That's like, if you search on our Twitter feed or whatever, I always post like a free link to it. But if you can make it through this whole like feature length documentary film that we made, somewhere towards the end, you see all this stuff I'm talking about, where we're like in Japan opening for Green Day. We go out and I'm like, we have one more show left. We have a day off, and then we have a, then we fly up to like the top part of Japan and play one more show. And then we're going to come home and then take off for like a year. And I get a call that my kid was being born like 3 weeks early.
Oh my God.
And I'm in Japan, and I'm like, holy shit, I got to get home for this. So I gave up that last show with Green Day. I told the band to play without me as a three piece. And I was like, I have to try and fly home. And I was like, finding flights. And I got a flight, and I get to the airport and I call, and they're like, yeah, your kid was born. Do you want to know what you had? And I was like, oh shit. So I missed his birth. At least I knew it was, I found out it was a boy, because we didn't know what it was going to be. And I was like, this, I told the story a million times, so I'm going to spare you guys this whole story. But long story short, like, I got home and like, okay, now I have a baby. And the Kenny had a baby that he, like, I'd seen Kenny, and he was like looking at his baby through Skype, because we're always on the road. I was like, oh, that's so sad. Like, I want to be home for this shit.
Yeah.
So like, and then, so we were just kind of like, let's be like grownups and humans, and like not be constantly gone for a little while Kenny's got a baby, Marco's got a baby, you know, maybe Aaron will find someone to have a baby with one day, you know, like, you know, cause you can never really have a relationship. And so like, the funny thing is like, we said we weren't going to tour anymore, but then the phone started ringing, and we get these offers to do like one-off shows where someone would be like, hey, we fly out and do this one show at this like college thing or this festival. And like, we started just saying like, oh no, we're not really doing shows. And then like, suddenly they'd like add another zero.
Yeah.
Like, holy shit. Like, should we do it? You know, I hate to let you feel like you're doing it for the money, but you're like, we're kind of like morons if we say no.
Yeah, absolutely.
We don't have to tour for 6 weeks playing every night to make the same amount of money that they're offering us to fly.
Like a college flight, show, right?
Putting us in hotel rooms, flying us there to play one show. And then we come home, like leave on Friday, come home on Sunday. Like, and so we started like saying yes to those things.
Mm-hmm.
And we probably like, I mean, you know, we did a bunch of those things, and it was actually kind of cool, because we were able to like have an excuse to get together and rehearse. And then that's when we would like, hey, what's this idea for this new song? And that's when we started like developing Lights Out.
Yeah.
And again, we had that opportunity to like throw a song into our set just for fun, because it was like, well, the show's for free. It's not necessarily even our fans there. We're just like flying out to some random college to play, like to be the sort of entertainment for their like orientation or some shit. And so it was a chance to sort of like workshop songs for Lights mm-hmm. Out. Even at Soundcheck, we'd be like working on something that would, I remember Hiatus was born out of Kenny playing this beat during Soundcheck. And then I had this like new delay pedal that I was all excited about. And I was like, dude, like, let's play something that sounds like U2, you know, I fuck with my delay pedal. And Kenny loved U2. So he started playing this. And then that song was just called the U2 song for like, until we probably like had to come up with a title for it. We're like, let's just call it Hiatus. Well, careful what you name your fucking song on your record. It's already called Lights Out. Yeah. It sort of like ended up, you know, becoming like a self-fulfilling prophecy. Yeah. It sort of became our, that record kind of became, it was, we set out to make that record thinking it was going to become like our American Idiot, like our big grand arrival after years and years of like building ourselves little by little, brick by brick. And our label was like, dude, all systems go, you guys have fucking worked so hard for so long. You've done, we've asked you for this much and you've delivered this much every time. So they were just like, you know, they were impressed that we had made Green Day happen.
Yeah.
You know, they were impressed that we got on tour with Blink 182. You know, we went and toured with them that last tour they did before they broke up. Remember when they split off and did Boxcar and Plus 44 right before that, we had this opportunity again. Last minute, we were home thinking, oh man, it's the holidays. We're going to be chilling with our friends for like, you know, Christmas break. And, you know, and then we get this call and they're like, hey, this is kind of a crazy thing. You got to say yes or no right now. Blink 182 needs a band to open for them for like 10 days in Northern Europe and the UK. Cause they had Death Cab for Cutie as the opening band, and Death Cab singer just like had to cancel last minute. Cause he's on like throat, you know, has to have surgery or something happened to his, like maybe he got laryngitis or something. And we were like, and they're like, by the way, there's no money. You're going to have to come out of pocket your own money to pay for the flights. And you're going to get paid so little that like, you know, you're basically not even going to be able to like eat on this trip. And you're going to be playing arenas every night, but literally like less money than you had when you first started. And we're like, what's the fucking answer? Hell yes.
Yeah.
Cause like, we're not doing this for the money. We're doing this for the fun and for the opportunity to reach people. And if we can open for Blink every night, are you kidding me? We played Wembley in fucking London twice, two nights in a row. We're like, hell yeah, we'll do that shit. And of course, Blink are such nice guys. They're so punk rock. They were like, dude, what are you talking about? There's no fucking budget for food. You guys, we got a catering truck that with our own personal chef who makes us fucking gourmet meals every night, and he makes way more than our band and crew can eat. Of course you guys come to dinner every night. I think we sat with them at their table every night and like had dinner with Mark one night, had dinner with Tom one night, had dinner with Travis another night, like fucking drank a bottle of like, you know, what's that? I remember Travis just got like that champagne, Dom Perignon, you know, somebody brought him like a case of that. He was just like, here, have one, like handing out one bottle to each person. I had the singer of The Cure was there, Robert Smith.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Because he sang on one of their songs.
Yep, he did, yeah.
So he came to the London shows and I ended up like, I was like, hey, you want to drink a bottle of wine? He's like, sure. You know, I ended up like hanging out with Robert Smith, drinking wine. Like that was one of the funnest tours we ever went on. Yeah. And we could have easily been like, well, we do the numbers and it doesn't seem like it's going to make money. Dude, we made tons of money. We sold merchandise.
Exactly, and, yeah.
Again, the memories we made are just like priceless, you know? Such cool things. Well, although the sad part of that story is that you could tell like
the tension was probably there, right?
It was like, yeah, that those guys were not getting along with each other. Yeah. It's kind of sad. You were like, they're all really cool people, but you never see them together unless they're on stage. And then it was unsurprising when you came home and found they broke up.
Yeah.
But after all that, we were just like, okay, this next record, we're going to take our time to do it because, and our label was like, we will pay for everything. Like we'll make, you know, they shot the video for Dude Alone twice because they didn't like the first one, you know, and they, you know, the fancy artwork, we flew us to New York and hired a model and hired a hotel to take the pictures for it. Like sure, all that shit was like, we had never seen anything like it before. Like these guys were like, we think you're going to be as big as, like they had the White Stripes. They had all these other bands, you know, we're like, we think you guys are going to be like the biggest band in the world. And we're like, okay, fuck.
sure.
Whatever you say, you know, you're right. You know what? I like the way you think. And so we're like, okay, fuck it. I mean, we have nothing to lose. We're just going to do what we always do, make up some songs and record them. So you can spend as much money on us as you want. Of course, you know, then we flew to New York like once a month and we do like press and promotional stuff. And I felt like we lived in New York for a while, and like, because our label was based there at the time. And then, and these guys at the label were so cool, so smart, so driven. It was like this amazing vibe. And we thought like we'd made Lights Out. I was really stoked on the way the record came out. And then all of a sudden one day, it was literally Lights Out. Like,
yeah,
we called our label and there was no answer. And our managers like sent us some like press clip. It was like, for immediate release, you know, this label is immediately, you know, effective immediately, out of business. Cause like, I guess like the parent company that owns the label, like there's some venture capitalist or whatever, just decided to like get out of the music business. And we're like, yeah, let's cut our losses and dissolve the label. And like, they had just signed Alkaline Trio. They had just signed this other band. Like they were scooping up some different bands that were like similar size as us. They were really like all systems go, about to go for it. And I think they had the Raconteurs record, you know, like all these things were happening. And then it was just like flatlined, completely over, like literally lights out. And we thought sure that like we would get like, okay, well, once the dust settles, like we'll, you know, get out of this thing and get into an, you know, another label in their same distribution system or whatever. So we sort of were like, okay, so we're good. And then it was like, yeah, this is going to be fine. And then we started to realize like, seems like they're not really paying us the money that they owe us. Seems like we're returning our calls. But Jack White had like, because he's, you know, so much more successful early on with his lawyer manager guy, and was just like, boom, settle for pennies on the dollar and get out to get his rights and just leave. Because Jack White never does a deal. He never does a record deal where they own your masters. Mm-hmm. He does a thing called licensing where he basically says like, here, give me this much money and I'll give you 5 years where you get to do whatever you want with my masters. But then after 5 years, it reverts back to me. That's why he's able to have Third Man Records, and he can kind of like find new deals or renegotiate. So he was really smart.
Yeah.
But again, when the White Stripes made it, they had built themselves up to be really big and then got a song on the radio out of obscurity. So when they signed to a label, they were able to say like, jump, and the label said how high.
Right.
they were holding the cards. So he was able to do it. We were not in that situation. We had like I said, we had said yes to the first deal we got. And so they owned us for like 7 records. And our ownership of our deal had been taken over by this label in New York that was owned by this other company. Bunch of boring shit that I'm sure your listeners care less about. But like, just, you know, there's a lot of complicated business-y kind of shit behind the scenes that had nothing to do with art or fans or anything like that. And, you know, our hands were kind of tied. We were like, well, this is fucking ridiculous. We're supposed to put out Do It Alone. Then we were going to put out Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And then we were going to put out Start a Riot. And then we were going to put out, I think we were going to put out The Investigation. One of the slower songs. No, Shaking. We were going to put out Shaking
as like a
single. They were committed to 4 singles. So like, it was like, this whole plan, we're going to put out the catchy sort of fun one that looks, that sounds more like your old music. And then the dark one that show people that you're changing your vibe a little bit.
Yeah.
And then the really fast, crazy, like one that sounds like, you know, sort of a combination of all of the things. Like, to me, that's what Riot really was.
Yeah.
And then a slow one that might turn out to be like your fucking Wake Me Up When September, like the one that like people who don't even like hard rock or punk rock are gonna like, you know. And we're like, okay, sounds like a plan. Like, let's do it. You know, like 4 singles, who gets to do that? Because every single costs a lot of money and effort to do. And we were so stoked. And then all of a sudden it was just over. And like I said, all this shit started to happen, and we started to realize, holy shit, I don't think they're gonna let us go. I think we're just like collateral damage.
Yeah.
And they're just gonna cut their losses and just be like, and it was actually, it's really like ethically wrong when companies do that. Cause you're like, you know, they don't recognize, to them, it's just like numbers.
Sure. Absolutely. It's
like, this is our fucking band that we like built from scratch in our little town. And like all these years, us and our fans have had this like amazing relationship where we've built this thing and built this trust with people. And all of a sudden something that's people that we've never even looked in the eyes, we've never even met before, are like in control of our fucking destiny.
Yeah.
Man, it's the music business.
It's messed up, man. Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, I don't know. Like, that sort of took the wind out of our sails
for the
first time since we started as a band. And like little by little, we just kind of had to start saying no to opportunities. I remember the Used wanted to take us on tour, and we were afraid to do the tour because we were afraid that if we got on a high profile tour. Offspring offered us a tour, mm-hmm. and we started saying no to things. And like I said, our band was built on saying yes to shit.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. Absolutely.
And we started saying no because we thought, like, well, if we do something like that and they see our name in print, they're going to get stars in their eyes and think that they've got some hot commodity.
Right.
They should hang on to. We were trying to make ourselves as unattractive as possible so that they would drop us and give us the rights back to all of our masters. We wanted them to think Sugar Cult was worthless.
Yeah.
So they'd be like, here, take this fucking shit, you know?
Yeah. Get this shit out of here. Yeah.
Yeah. And instead they're like, you know, I don't know. And so it just, meanwhile, you know, we all started getting kind of like involved in other projects. It's just as you do, you know, you're like, okay, I'm not going to sit here and like cry about this forever. So like Tim started working with other bands and producing and co-writing. And he ended up getting a, like a really big hit with this band. The first band he ever produced was called the Neon Trees. Mm-hmm. We had met them on the road when they were just a local band in Utah and kind of kept in touch with them. And then he wrote a song with them and got them a record deal. And so then like he ended up getting a gig to produce a couple songs on their first record. They liked him and they ended up having him produce the whole record. And then that song Animal became a big hit.
Yep, absolutely.
Neon Trees. And then of course he was like, oh shit, that was crazy. Then they made another record and they chose a different producer, but they had Tim do one song just to be like, throw him a bone. Like one song. And they had him do one song and that song was Everybody Talks.
Yeah.
It turned out to be the only hit on that second record. So the one song Tim produced was a hit. Like
yeah,
I said,
absolutely.
When I first met Tim, he's got that thing. He's so like, if he touches a song, it becomes a good song. He's got this like really weird, he's completely untrained.
Yeah.
He's just got this like something about him.
Because he only listened to the greatest hits, man. That's all he knew. All he knew was hits, probably.
I guess you are what you eat. You know, like all he ever fucking ate was like catchy fucking choruses.
Yeah, absolutely.
But dude. So then that was kind of that. And Aaron had this other sort of like project with all his kind of like, you know, weirdo sort of stoner friends that like he would jam, like sort of tinker with whenever he was home from tour. Because he had a bunch of home studio equipment, and that band eventually kind of took shape and became Edward Sharpe and the Magnetic Zeros.
Yeah.
Which had a huge song.
They did,
song
yeah.
And Aaron produced that record and played bass on it and co-wrote those songs. So all of a sudden, Aaron's like kind of getting a second act where it's like, oh shit. And also culture, if you remember at this time, like the idea of pop punk and emo was sort of getting like
downhill,
out of the way. Like bands like The Bravery and Hot Heat were kind of popular and The Killers were emerging. And like, you know, that definitely had an impact on Lights Out. Like there's certain songs on Lights Out that are definitely influenced by that.
Sure, absolutely.
We loved all that shit. Like we loved the fucking Bravery and Hot Heat and The Faint and all those kind of bands that were coming out. And like, and The Killers, you know, all that shit. We loved all that shit. But like, right after that, there was kind of a shift that started happening where you had bands like Edward Sharpe and mm-hmm. like Mumford and Sons, like more sort of organic kind of festival kind of indie bands.
Sure.
And Aaron was kind of there and he was like, fuck it. And he just started doing that. So we were like, kind of like, well, Aaron's busy with Edward Sharpe. Tim's busy in the studio. I put up this other sort of project with my friends called The Playing Favorites. And I had this other side band called Bad Astronaut and, you know, just sort of other projects that we, you know, Kenny wanted to do some other shit. He did this like weird project with some of the guys from the band Lit. Mm-hmm. And like, we all just sort of like indulging in things that we had never had time to do because we were always so busy with.
Sure. Right. Absolutely.
And then just like, you know, then Tim had a kid and I had another kid and Kenny had another kid. And eventually it just started to become like, I don't know, guys, like, I feel like, you know, we kind of had our fun and I feel like, now it just feels like we'd be kind of forcing it. It just doesn't feel like the natural thing for us to do. And there we are.
Yeah. It just kind of sort of ended, right?
Like I said, dude,
it just slowed down a bit.
I hate to like not give people closure, but I will just for the record. Yeah. I like to say it this way, like Sugar Cult never broke up.
Yeah.
We just kind of broke down.
Yeah.
So in that respect, there was never this like, fuck you. Like there was never like this like dramatic sort of climax ending. It was just kind of like this gradual sort of like if you stop filling gas in the tank, eventually you're just going to start coasting until the car is eventually just going to like
sure
pull off in the middle of the desert and everyone's going to eventually like, you know, call their own Ubers and get somewhere else. But
yeah,
that car is still sitting out there. And at any given time, we can find it.
Just turn it back on.
Kenny,
right?
Kenny's our drummer. Kenny's really good with cars. He could, he could bring it back to life.
Yeah.
You know, and we could get in that car and keep on going anytime we want. I mean, there's no rules. You know, people want to believe these bands have these like beginnings, middles, and ends. But the way I look at it, it's like, who knows, man? Like, we never said, fuck you, I'm never going to play again. You know, we always just said like, oh, dude, I mean, when we talk to any one of us individually, most of us in the band would all have like nothing but good memories about Sugar Cult.
Yeah, absolutely.
God, I love those guys. They're all still my friends. We love what we did. We're proud of it. And, you know, it's just one of those things where like, I feel like probably the main person in the band, the one guy we can't do the band without is Tim.
Sure.
We changed drummers and that was a big enough adjustment.
Yeah.
But I don't think we could ever do the band. There's been people along the way are like, hey, why don't you get like, you know, so-and-so from another band? And I don't know. I feel like with Sugar Cult, Tim is such a like integral part of what makes Sugar Cult.
Sure.
And with no disrespect to myself or Aaron or the other, you know, Ben or Kenny, you know, Sugar Cult's definitely a collaborative, bigger than the sum of its parts operation. Mm-hmm. But I feel like without Tim, it's like he is like his voice and his like, you know, his thing is what makes Sugar Cult to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
You need Tim plus other people impacting him. And so we've always thought like, unless Tim wants to do it, we're not going to fuck with it.
Sure.
Because our band, our legacy, our fans deserve that, you know. We don't need the money. We all have other things to do with our lives. Mm-hmm. Band makes plenty of money just by, you know, the shit it already did. So it's like, and I like that because I would hate to do Sugar Cult just because we needed to pay our bills.
Sure, absolutely.
Like, I'm so thankful that we're not in a position where we like have to do Sugar Cult or our kids aren't going to fucking eat.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because then you're making music out of fear instead of out of love.
Absolutely.
And I don't think that's good. I don't think you make good. I think we can all think of a couple bands we love.
Sure.
Eventually when you listen to a record and you're like, this record sounds like
the rent was due, right?
Yeah. They needed to feed the beast so they could make an excuse to go on tour and sell hoodies for a living. And
sure.
I don't know. To me, that's just not very sexy. I mean, you teach their own, but like, I don't want to do that. Like we care about this band too much. So I feel like, again, the door's not closed.
Right.
It's just like, I don't know. Who knows? It's been a long time.
It's been 10 years since you guys did something.
Yeah, we plan on going away for like a year or two.
Yeah.
But, you know, life is weird that way. Like,
yeah,
you don't have the momentum. It's sort of just like, it becomes like we've gotten offered a bunch of things. I remember the Warped Tour when they did their final thing. They were like, dude, you guys got to come. But it's just like, you know, it gets harder and harder to commit.
Sure, absolutely.
You know, it means Tim would have to say, you know, he's like, dude, what if I commit to this thing? And like, imagine this month we commit to something in September. Mm-hmm. Well, then imagine in like July, you get the offer to produce the new Weezer record.
Right. Yeah.
Either no, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Like, so it's like, it's hard with a band because you make plans so far ahead.
Yeah.
When you're living like weekly or daily or monthly lives, it's hard to do that as you grow up. So
yeah, absolutely.
When you're young, you got nothing to lose. The answer is yes before the question's even finished being asked. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
someone's like, hey, do you want it? You're like, yeah. And they're like, you don't even know what I'm asking you.
I don't care. Yeah.
Totally rad. Let's do it. You know?
Yeah.
But now you have to think about things a little bit more. So I will promise you that, you know, if we never make another record again, well, we've got three records that we love.
Absolutely.
That we're really proud of. And I feel like they've aged really well. I don't feel like they sound ridiculous today. But if we ever do make a record again, I promise you that it's because it'll be really fucking meaningful.
Yeah.
It'll be because it matters and because we need to make that record.
Absolutely.
You know? And so I look at it like that. I'm kind of curious. Like there's a part of me that's like, I'm super stubborn about it where I'm like, if we can convince Tim to do it, like the next Sugar Cult record, I think we have one more good record in us.
Sure.
I don't think we have 10 more or two more or three more, but I think we have one more really good record in us that we need to make at some point while we're still relatively young. And that's like, that's the tension that I kind of enjoy. Like, I feel like we got one more fucking, you know,
one more shot thing left. Yeah, yeah.
And that's absolutely because we never made the record after Lights. Like these mm-hmm. each record has its own personality and represents a chapter absolutely of time in our lives. And then like the record after Lights Out will be a record that was made after our fans grew from teenagers sure. into adults, and after we grew from like, you know, scrappy fucking upstarts to like, you know, professionals and our mm-hmm. you know, and like grown-ups and like people with like a lot of years behind them to look. And I think that'll be an interesting record. I mean,
I agree,
it sounds obnoxious to say, but like not unlike American Idiot.
No, absolutely. Yeah, I would agree with
that. Green Day was done. Yeah. And then American Idiot was like a new beginning. You know what I mean?
No, so, absolutely. I would agree with that, man. I think the interesting thing about Lights Out, obviously, it's, you know, it is my favorite record from you guys for a handful of reasons. One, Do It Alone is my favorite song from you guys.
Oh, shit. Wow.
It is. And I think it's, I know, you know, we talked about this a little bit last time, but I know it's a bit of a darker record, obviously, right? I mean, you know what, lyrically, what it's a lot of it's about. I know we talked about that last time, kind of what Tim was going through and all of that. So I think, you know, the follow-up record would be so interesting to kind of, you know, get that snapshot of where you guys are at now, right? I know.
And it could be really, I mean, you know, again, I don't want to disappoint people in advance.
No, yeah, record, absolutely.
But I look at like, if and when we do a record, it's like, I don't know if it'll be as fucking, I don't know if, I mean, hopefully people will like it if they're right. just going to go for the ride with us. But one thing you know with Sugar Cult is we never like repeated ourselves.
Sure,
like
each, no, absolutely.
Each record has its own personality. They all sound like Sugar Cult to some degree, but like, no song on, like maybe there's one or two songs on Start Static that could have been on Lights Out because mm-hmm. they sort of have that darkness. But like, and then, you know, so each record, like Start Static was like, you know, you got 40 songs as a band and you boil mm-hmm. it down to like what 11 songs are going to be our handshake with the world. And like, you know, you've only been a band for 2 years. So it's like mm-hmm. Tim had dated this girl and then they broke up. So he had like one or two relationships that didn't work out. And then he wrote that record, mm-hmm. you know, wrote those lyrics. And then like Palm Trees and Power Lines, he had this other girl he sort of was dating. And that weird thing where you're a band that's on the road all the time and you try to maintain a relationship, but it doesn't really work. And you come home thinking it's going to be what it was, and it's not really what it was. Mm-hmm. So he had that sort of heartbreak of that record. You know, and we also parted ways with our drummer, mm-hmm. Ben. So you have songs like Champagne that kind of address that. Ben had like sort of like a substance abuse situation. And so Palm Trees and Power Lines is like the classic record of like a band that started out as a local band, then suddenly became a traveling right. band and started mm-hmm. this feeling of like I said this last time, it's like you get this really bizarre thing where you don't really know, you kind of lose your gravity, you lose what sure. home means, because you think home is what you've always known, and then you leave on the road for years and years and years, and you come back and you're like, you kind of have this like, I don't want to say PTSD, because it's not like touring is like being a soldier, touring is fucking yeah. awesome, but you have this weird thing where you kind of, it's hard to come back down to just being a normal human waiting in sure. line at Trader Joe's and like with all your friends you grew up with that have like moved on in their life, and they have like apartments and girlfriend and long-term relationships and normal like jobs that people have. And we're like, yeah. you come home and people are like, dude, so are you us out there like every night just hanging out with groupies and fucking, you know, living the lifestyle? And you're like, well, not really. I hate to disappoint you. Yeah. You know, but like being in a band is not that fucking outrageous. It's most of the time it's us like, you know, in the back lounge watching a fucking movie, you know, yeah. what I mean? Or like walking around, like trying to find a place to get coffee or trying to find a record store. It's not like, you know, normal people in everyday life, they don't have a frame of reference point other than what they've seen in the movies. And the movies always get it wrong.
Right. Absolutely.
It was always like, oh, they're doing fucking heroin and cocaine and having like, you know, blowjobs and the fucking orgies. Not in our band.
Not sure.
maybe in Motley Crue, you know. Yeah, but in our band, it was a little bit more fucking. It was just, you know, like guys want to go get sushi. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't the most fucking debaucherous situation ever. We had a lot of fun, but it wasn't like. So you kind of come home and people are like, "Well, whatever, dude. Okay, cool. That's cool. You're a rock star." So, anyways, you guys want to go over to so and so's house for a party? And you're like, "Okay." And then you're there, and it's like you just feel like. You kind of miss the guys you're always, you know, first you want to kill each other. And then you're like, I kind of miss Aaron and Tim. And yeah. you know, you kind of find yourself calling them. You're like, what are you doing? They're like, oh, no, dude. I miss tour. And you're like, I know, I do too. What do you want to do? And so you kind of can't relate to anybody else unless they have that life. Like, so you end up kind of in a weird way. I mean, you try to stay close to the people you knew before you went on the road, but you have sort of joined this new traveling circus community of, like, you know, I'm like, God, I made so many friends on the road. But I think about it when we come home, I'm like, wait a minute. AFI lives in Northern California. Bowling for Soup lives in fucking Texas.
Yeah.
You know, that other band we met lives in London. That other band we met lives in New York. That other band, the Used, lives in Utah. Like, those guys, the Useless ID, who we shared a tour bus with, live in fucking Israel.
Yeah.
Like, we have these friends that are like, we don't think when you're hanging out, you live in rock and roll.
Yeah, absolutely.
But when you get home, you realize, like, oh my God, some of my favorite people literally live in, like, different fucking states or countries.
Yeah.
And so it's a really bizarre thing, and you don't really feel at home again until you go back on the road.
Mm-hmm.
So it flips around. First, it's you tough, miss home, and then you miss the road, and then you're like, I don't even know who I am or where I live. And so it's a real trip, and that's what Palm Trees and Power Lines is kind of about, the sort of romance and reality of, like, Los Angeles as a town, because that became our new town. Eventually, we all moved to LA. And then also the, you know, civilian life versus rock and roll touring life, just, and then relationships that, and lack thereof. So that's what Palm Trees is. And then Lights Out is like, okay, no girlfriend for Tim, just literally fucking one night stands on the regular basis, living the, like, constant, like, trying to make up for love by, like, looking for love, but finding just, like, temporary, like, band-aids on a bullet hole. Like, I'm looking for, I'm trying to fill this void that doesn't exist. It's never going to be filled.
Sure.
You know, and he was just kind of like, you know, you're kind of smiling, but also kind of tears are coming out of your, because you're kind of going, like, I remember Tim would talk to me and be like, dude, it's like, kind of like, you know, high-fiving me, like, dude, I did the craziest thing. It was like, you know, I had this girl drop me. I stayed behind after bus call, stayed with this girl, then I had her drive me to the airport, and then I flew to the next city, and then I had another girl pick me up from the airport. Yeah. I went to her apartment, then I went to soundcheck, and then later that night I met another girl.
Yeah.
And you're like living this life, and you're like, this is kind of rad in a like a stereotypical rock star way. Yeah. But at the same time, and he was always very careful and safe and all that kind of stuff, which I just, kudos to him. He was a very responsible rock star. But at the same time, he was like kind of feeling shitty about it. He was like, I kind of feel like a fucking gross, disgusting fucking pig, because I'm just like, he kind of almost like, you know, just having one night stands and all the time and not really, like, you know, as a substitute for something more real. So it's not unsurprising that shortly thereafter we ended up meeting a woman, and they're married and they have, you know, kids.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, he's totally. But I think you get to the other end. Some people get to the point where, like, what is there, like, there is a point where there's too much of a good thing. You know, you're like, that seems like every guy's dream to be able to
figure
a man and get any chick you want. But you realize, like, it's not the chick you're looking for. It's
right.
Connection you're looking for. And I think that's what Lights Out is really about. There's two things happening. There's this weird, like, getting to be inside the music business and getting to see how shit works with radio and with, you know, we had certain things where we'd sort of hit glass ceilings where, like, we couldn't get bigger as a band because our label didn't have, like, the political power to, like, didn't have the right weight with a radius. And all these things you learn about that you're like, seriously, that fucking exists? Like, some of the shit we learn about now, when you look, if you pay attention to, like, Washington and stuff, you know, we won't even go there, but, like, you start to kind of scratch your head and go, things are kind of rigged a little bit against, like, it's really fucking hard to make it to the big time as an artist if you're not in bed with the right people.
Sure. Yeah.
If you're not, like, on Warner Brothers or fucking Columbia Records or something, there really are these glass ceilings where, like, certain radio stations won't play you because there's nothing in it for them if they play you. Like, if they played us, then what? So who are they going to get?
Exactly.
But if they played another band, then it's like, okay, well, if you play the new song by this band, then we're going to give you, then Green Day is going to play your festival. And then they would go, oh. So we started seeing some of that shit. And so that record, Lights Out, has kind of two main themes. There's, like, you know, the dark side of the music business. We've seen songs like Out of Phase or Dead Living.
Yeah.
And then, like, the sort of like fun yet the sort of bittersweet factor of like loveless love.
Exactly.
Like, songs like Shaking, Do It Alone, Hiatus is like the last line of Hiatus kind of just seals the deal where he's like, I can't live like this forever. Like, I can't, this isn't fucking sustainable. It's like, you know, I feel kind of like shitty about myself, you know? Mm-hmm. And like, yeah. So again, it's so that's where it was. So the next record, it's like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, do you want a Sugar Cult record that's about having a daughter and a fucking wife? You know what I mean? And like a Cocker Spaniel. You know what I mean?
Why not, man? So
like, maybe it's like a good thing that we haven't put a record out. You know, we need to like live a little bit more life now and like then put out the record that's like, okay, here's the document of like the other side. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, I don't know what to tell you, man. Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah. You're welcome that we didn't make the Cocker Spaniel record.
Yeah. Yeah, no,
everything's
absolutely.
Just so wonderful and I have a really nice house and a fucking, you know, family. It's like, I don't know. People need to hear that song.
Yeah. I mean, hey, you could sing about the anxiety of your kid turning 16, right?
I keep saying, I'll tell you when Sugar, because I have, my kids are a couple years older than Tim's, and it's like, I'll tell you when we're making another Sugar Cult record right now. I'll bet you right now. Gentlemen, here we go. Bet. I'll give you a $50 bet. This is when we're gonna make another record.
Love
it. As soon as Tim's daughter turns 13. That's when we're making another Sugar Cult record.
You think so?
Once you have teenagers in your life, then you got it back. You got that. You got that tension back. You know, because when your kids are like under 30, when your kids are like elementary school age, you're like, you know, you're a superhero. You can do no wrong. The kids just like, you know, want to play with you all the time. As soon as they can be teenagers, they start to push against you.
Yeah, they're not as like, cute anymore, right?
It's weird because like you've completely surrendered as like a person and been like, okay, I'm all about my kids. And then the kids naturally start to like push against you. And like, you know, kind of, and then it becomes kind of like terrifying again where you're like, oh my God, like shit, did I? And then you also question yourself. You're like, did I do this right? Like, I don't really know what I'm fucking doing. Like, did I make these people, did I wire them? Did I wire them correctly?
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
And then, you know, you're also sort of have this anxiety on the horizon that starts to loom where you feel like, oh shit, they're going to like eventually like be like out of my
on their own. Yeah.
Control.
Yeah.
And they're going to be on their own and like, and you really, that's gnarly. And it's like on two fronts. You're one, you're going, I hope they're going to be okay. But another one, you're like, what's going to happen to me? Like, this is like, I've defined myself by this. Role. And of course, I mean, my mom is still my mom. Like I still talk to my mom all the time. You never stop being a parent.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, it's not like you're not like taking someone to soccer, making them lunch, telling them to school, telling them with their homework. It's not like your constant thing that's consuming you 24/7. So it becomes like you play this like more background role. And even as a teenager, you're sort of like, hey, these kids, you sort of have to take your, you have to like relinquish a little bit of control and let them learn some shit for themselves, which is hard, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's hard because, you know, you know what it's like. I still feel like a teenager myself. I'm like, shit, you know? But it's so that's going to be when we make their next, I bet you that's when we will make our next record.
Sure.
Once Tim is like, because he's going to have something to write songs about. We're going to make a song about a girl, but it's not going to be a girl that he's in a,
right, yeah, about his daughter.
It's going to be about, oh my God, what happened to the person who used to think I was fucking the superhero?
Yeah.
Now it's screaming at me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And slamming doors.
How old is his daughter now?
You know, she's school age.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay. Keep it
on. I don't want to give you guys like a timeline.
No. Like, you're fine. Oh, I was just curious. Yeah.
But, you know, you'll know she's a teenager because that's when Sugar Cult's going to suddenly be like, hey, we have a new record coming out. It's called
Surprise.
It's going to, and then we're going to cover that song by My Chem called Teenager Scare the Living Shit Out of Me. we're just going to open. That's going to be the first song on our record.
Yeah. I love it.
Like, why is Sugar Cult covering that My Chem song?
Well, don't know if they listen to this podcast, don't know exactly why.
There you go. You got it. If you guys listen this long, then I don't know what to tell you. You need help.
Yeah.
I will help you. I will help you. I will send me a GoFundMe link and I will donate to your mental health crisis campaign fund because you've listened to my talk for this long.
Yeah.
And thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Marco, I appreciate your time, man. Yeah.
It's my pleasure, dude. I really wish we could put more music out there.
Of course.
And if the least we can do is I love that people like you do these podcasts where at least you give us an opportunity to communicate with our fans.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because otherwise all people have is shit they can Google from a long time ago. And it's like, I want them to know we're still alive.
They're out there.
Love you guys. And we still love music. All of us are still constantly making music and playing music. Mm-hmm. So, you haven't heard The Last of Us yet, but
yeah,
you know, and we do have 2021 is, if you want to do the math, the 20th anniversary of Start Static. So we do have some,
some things.
Like yesterday, my emails between me and Tim and our manager are like, they're starting to get more and more frequent. So we have some stuff up our sleeve this year, which will be mostly to celebrate the 20-year anniversary of Start Static. So you might see something about that.
Yeah.
And I don't want to jinx it nor spoil it, but it is a 20-year anniversary and something needs to be done.
Something needs to be done. Yeah. Yeah, the last thing you guys did was for the 10-year anniversary of that, I think, 2011. Yeah. So,
and the next thing we do will be for the 30-year anniversary. Yeah. I'm just joking. No, we forgot about the 10-year anniversary of Palm Trees and I think of Lights Out. So we still owe you those things too. So,
yeah.
But at the same time, we will always commemorate these things because they're important parts of our band. But at the same time, I understand a lot of our fans are like I talk to people on social media all the time. Marco DeSantis, my Instagram, or Sugar Cult Marco is my Twitter, or if Sugar Cult's Facebook page, I'll usually respond to you if you send me a message. And people are like, yeah, dude, I appreciate it. That's great. We're stoked if there's like a 20-year anniversary edition or something, but we want new music. We hear you guys. We know you want new music, but we also have, I will say, I don't know if anybody's interested in this, but we have this record that we sort of compiled of our demos from before Start Static. Mm-hmm. A lot of songs that were like from our first batch of songs when we were just starting out as a band in 99. And we had put out a thing kind of on our own called Wrap Me Up in Plastic. Mm-hmm. And we see people selling them online for like crazy amounts of money and they've never been officially released before. And we just found out that we own the rights to those songs.
Nice.
And so I think you might see that coming out soon.
Sweet.
So I don't know if that's, again, that's not new music, but it might be new.
New to people.
Interesting. You know, I'm a total nerd. Like, I love hearing the artists I like. I love hearing in a weird way, I like hearing their old music, their early days, more than I like their new music. Like, if you gave me a Rolling Stones new record, I'd probably never listen to it. But if you gave me a collection of their early recordings from when they were teenagers, I'd be all over it because it's like cultural anthropology. It's just fascinating. Shit, you can hear little glimmers and glimpses of what would eventually become the shit that we
absolutely.
Whereas if you hear their music now, you're like, yeah, dude, fucking, I don't want to hear an 80-year-old sing me a song. I love the Stones. I want to hear them sing me the songs they wrote a long time ago. That's the other fucked up thing about being a band that has history. I worry that if we made another record, it would be like that, where people are like, sweet, you got a new record. But it's like, do you really want a new record? Or do you just wish that you were still 15 and you wish that we could go back in time and make Palm Trees and Power Lines feel new again?
Yeah.
I always worry about that. I'm like, I don't
know.
Careful what you ask for. You know what I mean? A new record by Sugar Cult might fucking be like, might be a bunch of songs that sound like Lost in You. it might just be a bunch of fucking Goo Goo Dolls songs. Yeah.
That'd be sweet though, man. Hey, I would love it.
Yeah, you might think you're going to get fucking Dead Living and Stuck in America, but you might end up with a fucking Jack Johnson record. You know what I mean? Campfire songs for days.
Yeah, absolutely.
By fucking, a bunch of dads.
Yeah, so absolutely.
We'll see.
Absolutely.
So thanks a lot, guys. We, find us through social media and stay tuned because you might have some, we might give you a big, giant dose of pre-Start Static Sugar Cult songs that you'll be able to get. And they might not be on Start Static for a good reason, but I think they're, I think some of them are pretty good.
Hey, they were written for a reason, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So we think we're probably ready to do that. And we'll see what else happens, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Marco,
I would love to keep hanging out, but I really have to pee. So I'm
no, you are good. I'll let you get out of here, man. I appreciate it. I look forward to whatever you guys got going on. And just know If there's anything resembling a show, I will make myself there. So I appreciate it, man. And dude, I'll let you get out of here.
I appreciate it. And dude, what's the name of your podcast again?
It's called Classically Emo.
Oh, that's right. So Classically Emo.
Yeah, man.
Thank you so much, Classically Emo. Thanks, Logan. And thanks to anyone who's listening. Sugar Cult, you know.
Again, Sugar Cult forever.
Not completely dead, but, you know, we're just kind of like in the freezer, you know, underneath the fucking, you know, underneath the like tater tots.
Freezer burn on it. Yeah, a little.
Jägermeister and whatever else people keep in their freezers. You know? Yeah. So that'll be our next record. It'll be called Freezer Burned.
I love it. All right. I love it. All right, Marco. Thank you so much, man.
Thanks a lot, dude. Take care.
You too.
All right. Be well. See ya. Yeah.
And there you have it. There was our second of two parts, however you want to phrase that. I don't even know. Hope you guys enjoyed these last two episodes with Marco from Sugar Cult. He was a great, great guest. I'd love to have him, you know, back on at some point in the future. Sugar Cult was certainly one of the, obviously they were the first band that we did for this podcast when Jameson came on and we talked about Lights Out. So like I mentioned, you know, last week, this was a great honor of mine to have Marco come on and talk to us a little bit about Sugar Cult and kind of what the future may or may not look like, for them, and just kind of waiting for the right timing, which, you know, I know he mentioned that earlier, but I think that's for them. It's great to hear that, you know, although they wouldn't rule anything out in the future, they're not rushing back into, you know, making a Sugar Cult record or playing shows or going on tour just for the, you know, for the nostalgia of it, right? I think they obviously all have a lot of love for the band. There's a lot of love between one another for that band, but they're all obviously, as Marco and I talked about, kind of busy doing their own things for now. So I hope you guys really enjoyed these last 2 weeks. I've had a great time, you know, talking to Marco, and I think we are hopefully going to see something for, you know, the 20th anniversary of Start Static. I know him and I talked about that a little bit, so we'll kind of keep an eye out for that on mine, and hopefully you guys do as well. So thank you so much for listening, and we've got another great episode up for you next week. So come back then. We'll see you then. We'll be right back.